Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The U.S. FDA has approved the first pharmaceutical with an active ingredient derived from marijuana. Does the approval open the door for other CBD-derived medications? What about those side effects? And how should patients look at the science when making their own healthcare decisions? George Hendrickson is running for the U.S. House of Representatives, and he joins us now in the SDPB Suval studio. George, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Sorry about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
It always helps if you turn all the microphones on. George, you're running with the Libertarian Party for U.S. House. Is that correct?
Correct.
And that fits in your philosophy overall for what should be happening in Washington. How? Tell us a little bit about what it means to be libertarian.
You know, the main attraction for Libertarian Party for me is personal freedoms. And so we you know, I'm a big constitutional freedom person, and so that plays right in hand with that. Anymore, we see more and more restrictions, more and more regulations coming down on us personally, to where we live, you know, one of the most restrictive legislated lives, I think, that was never intended by our founding fathers. And so that's one of the things that brought me to the Libertarian Party.
Right. For people who, you know, we had an initial conversation with you that's still available on our website. You've got lots about you on your website as well. But a little bit of background about who you are and your background in South Dakota and sort of why you're making this run for the U.S. House. Let's start there for a few minutes.
Sure. Well, as I like to tell everybody, I'm a father of three. I'm a husband of one. And now apparently I'm an advocate for thousands. And this all really started probably about 12 years ago when my first daughter was born. And I'd always understood or felt that I understood what unconditional love was, but I had really no idea until my first daughter was born that I had no clue. And that was a very sudden impact of what unconditional love was. And it was a huge lesson for me. It was exceedingly overpowering. And shortly, a little time later, 16 months later, my next daughter's born, and an entirely different lesson, kind of a life circumstance lesson. And she brought out the best in me about learning about having patience and how to think of things differently and how not to live with inside my own bubble. And what I did not know was that those two crucial lessons were a setup for my son that was going to be born just a few short years later, who was born with a life-threatening condition called Dravet syndrome. It's an intractable epilepsy has a high propensity to be deadly. And, you hear the stories about the children have 300 seizures a day. That's Dravet syndrome and several other rare syndromes that react the same way, but his is one of those types of conditions. And so through the process of learning about his condition and trying to keep him alive, you do so much research that you become a lawyer, you become a doctor, you become a nurse, you become a researcher. I mean, you really... And in the end game comes as you're looking for that thing that's going to fix what's killing him, you become an advocate. And that's what happened for us about 4.5 years ago or so. Maybe we're probably up to 5 years now. We started trying to help get legislation in this state that would not only bring relief for my son, but for countless thousands of others in the state, including so many of our veterans, disabled veterans, and other children with severe disabilities, and just even people suffering from pain.
I want to talk a little bit about what people say to you, because when you say you're an advocate for thousands, I'm a little curious to know, like, when people know the journey that you're on and the work that you're trying to do to get elected, but in the process of that, of, you know, having conversations like this one and spreading information, some of that feedback. But first, let's go back to the State House and when you were trying to get some of that legislation through peer and some of the things the lawmakers said to you, because that legislation was not successful in a way that you wanted it to be. What did you hear from them? And then we'll talk about what you're hearing from some of your supporters.
You know, it was probably the most prevalent comment that I would get is why don't you just move? Which to me is a signal, especially when it's coming from a legislator, signals to me that they're saying, please move. I don't want you to be my problem anymore.
Yeah. And leave our state and take your requests.
Take your
elsewhere.
Disabled yeah. child with you. Yep. Get out of my state and take your dying child with you. And so it's very personally hurtful. I don't think they actually mean it that way, but that's how it comes across, and maybe they do. But, moving is easier said than done. One, this is my home, too. I'm born and raised in South Dakota. This is a great place to be. I don't want to be any other place, and I don't want to be forced out of this place because of an inability to do some very elementary research into something. And so that was, you know, that's one of the issues that we would have. I'd hear a couple of times, I would have voted for it if it wasn't an election year. I'd heard that. Of course, I've also heard from doctors, I would love to speak out about it, but I'm not ready to retire. So, because there's such a stigma over it. And luckily, that's starting to wash away. The more and more we talk about it, the more and more we use facts about what it is, that we're now getting, real fact-based, information-based, peer-reviewed medical studies out there that we didn't have 5 years ago. And so that's helping change the conversation.
So the stigma, do you, in your estimation, is that stigma just basically we're talking about a marijuana-based medicine or medical marijuana, therefore you secretly just want to get high? Is that just, let's lay it on the table. Is that kind of what you're hearing from people? Like, oh, you don't just want the medicinal benefits. You want the euphoria. You want the high.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a propaganda point. And so, because I was guilty of falling for it back in 2000, I think it was 10 when there was an initiated measure that went through. And I, back then, like I said, prior lifetime, but as I was learning and growing, but even back then I was kind of like, well, I subscribed to the, it's just a bunch of pot smokers wanting to get high. I find an easy way of getting high. And that's the problem, is that is so incorrect. The process that would be put in place for a medical cannabis program in the state helps alleviate that problem. I've met a lot of interesting people on this road, and I was told by a person who is a regular cannabis user of a recreational sort, had told me that in his hometown, if he can't get his product inside of 3 minutes, he's moving. Well, that has something to say about how much illegal cannabis there is floating around in a state that keeps it illegal. And so that being said, it's easier probably to get street marketed, unsafe product than it is to get a medical card, because you have to be approved by multiple doctors. There'd be restrictions on application and residency. And so it all becomes a controlled issue. The doctor gets to determine how much of what you're going to have. And I mean, you can put in so many safeguards for dealing with this pediatric child. I mean, to say that now is like saying, okay, so you're saying that I'm using my dying child as an excuse to smoke marijuana, and I'm not a marijuana smoker. So, that becomes a farce anymore. And I hope people start to realize that a medical cannabis program is not something that makes it easier to get pot to smoke. A medical cannabis program is really about the establishment of bringing the world of science and medicine in line with botanical and medicinal medicines that, we're really starting to see that start to change in medicine now, where they're looking at alternative medical uses for in all kinds of avenues, whether it's acupuncture, we're still there with cannabis. And right. So I think we're going to get there.
The FDA approves this new medication, and one of its uses is to treat the syndrome that affects your child. It is derived with the active ingredient of CBD, which is directly from the marijuana plant. When you hear this news, are you like cautiously optimistic? Are you concerned? What's some of your first responses? And then as you've learned more, what have you learned about this, the potential and the potential challenges of this new medication?
So when they brought the legislation forward, which would have been SB 95 back in 2017, everybody really felt that this was going to be a win for my son and people all across the states. But what really takes place here is that the approval of Epidiolex only covers right now through the FDA two very specific, very rare seizure disorders, okay? So my son and a handful of other people will qualify for that. A lot of legislation just for a couple of people in this state, which is great, because if it works for any of them, that will be the blessing and the bonus. The problem is, and I think it was an unexpected result by their legislation, was that they scheduled CBD as a, now that it's been FDA approved, CBD in the state has to have FDA approval, and therefore it becomes a Schedule IV drug. And so by putting it on the drug schedule for medical purposes is proper. I mean, they would need to do that to get the prescription up. But what they didn't do is they didn't take into effect realize that the Medical Act of 2014 has specific provisions for whole hemp products and hemp products that contain CBD. And so there's a difference between CBD that's derived from cannabis, marijuana, and CBD that is derived from hemp as far as the federal government is concerned. So CBD, we look at the Hoban result from the Ninth Circuit Court. Initially there was a big scare that was going to make CBD illegal all across the country, but that particular ruling only pertains to Schedule One cannabis marijuana CBD. It has nothing to do with CBD derived from hemp now. Is at least that's the opinion that the law firm Hoban Law Firm is giving out there. So we're still in that realm where there are CBD products all across the country that should be able to be consumed as long as they didn't fall into the same hole that South Dakota did by making all CBD, no matter its origin, a Schedule 4 drug. And that's what we need to get changed now this year, just for the benefit of being able to have botanical oils that are derived from a whole plant of hemp.
When you look at the medication itself that the FDA has approved, is that something that, you know, I'm curious as to, there's a cost attached to it that we don't know for sure yet, but it could be in the thousands of dollars per month. It could not be. We're not sure. We're waiting for DEA guidance on. So there's all kinds of things. Let's pick apart one at a time. Let's talk about, you know, a medication is approved. Your son could possibly benefit from this medication, but can he? So how are you looking as a parent at that kind of announcement?
So in my research into, because trust me, I spent a long while looking at this stuff before I would ever consider giving it to my child. Right. And because we've worked tirelessly to keep him alive, and to just do something without researching what it's going to do would be just silly. And one of the things that we understand clearly is that hemp products that have multiple cannabinoids in them, there's about 106 known cannabinoids in a hemp plant or even a cannabis plant, they all work in conjunction with each other. There's a synergistic effect that is required with all of those cannabinoids. They call it an entourage effect. So if anybody out there wants to Google, cannabis entourage effect, they will get probably some really good responses on how that works, why all the cannabinoids are important, even if they're in small proportions, like hemp only has less than 0.3% of THC, but it's crucial to have that less than 0.3% because it helps with the entourage effect. The Epidiolex version, as I understand it, is more of a isolate. The CBD has been isolated out of the plant, so the rest of the cannabinoids are not there. So that would give me a cause to pause to give that to my child, because the way the endocannabinoidal system works and the lipids throughout all of your body are made to process this, I don't think it's going to hit right. And so the concern is that it wouldn't work. And so when we look at the results from Epidiolex's last stage 3 trials, the success rate of seizure reduction is not even near what I have seen in Colorado with children that are taking a whole plant remedy. I mean, I've met countless kids that are having 300 seizures a day that with a whole plant remedy, and I am talking a high CBD, ultra low or very low THC compound, going from 300 seizures a day to zero, or maybe some are having 3 a month, or maybe even 30 a month is a blessing. I mean, so when you're coming down from 300 a day, those results are fantastic. If you're looking at a 45% reduction in seizures with only, less than 50% of your study pool, that's not as much of a success rate as I would like to see. Certainly not one I would roll the dice with my child. We keep him very clean. His food's very clean. His medicine is very clean. I'm not about to just throw a Frankencrop inside my kid and that's been isolated down and worked over. And then what are the other ingredients they've put into the pill? I mean, if you look at the side effects of Epidiolex, if you have to have your liver enzymes checked, that is strikingly curious to me, because the whole plant cannabis actually has some really rejuvenative effects for your liver. So what have they done to the pill that is, you know, so these are unanswered questions for me. And it may be nothing. I mean, they may be just fine, but still it's cautionary as a dad.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is George Hendrickson. He's running for the U.S. House of Representatives as a Libertarian candidate. We'll have more with George after the break. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. My guest this afternoon is Mr. George Hendrickson. He is a candidate for U.S. House of Representatives, and he's running as a Libertarian. And we're talking about medical marijuana and federal oversight and the FDA's approval of a new cannabis-based with an active ingredient of CBD pharmaceutical that's been approved. And let's jump ahead a little bit, George, to, you know, once the FDA approved this this new medication, the next step has been sort of this, you know, guidance from the DEA about what happens next. And, you know, we talked earlier in our conversation about being libertarian and sort of feeling, you know, there are some government agencies that have a little too much to say, in your view. What are your thoughts about the DEA's involvement in this, and what are you watching for?
So, well, let me back up just one step and just say that the medical approval of Epidiolex absolutely has its place in our medical system. I mean, there needs to be a regulated medical version because there's an entire populace of people that's what they do. I mean, just because that's not how I would necessarily want to do it doesn't make it necessarily wrong. With that, though, the DEA and their ability to regulate, now this won't necessarily be hemp. The Ninth Circuit has already reaffirmed that hemp's off the table for the DEA. But as far as cannabis is concerned, they've now scheduled CBD as a Schedule 1. So it's the same as ecstasy, heroin, you know, peyote, LSD, all of those. Mm-hmm. A non-psychoactive, but they say it's an administrative rule so that they can just track it for international treaties. Here's the deal, though. When alcohol prohibition came into place, it required an amendment to the United States Constitution to give Congress the authority to tell every single American citizen that they must not and may not consume alcohol in any way, shape, or form. How on earth did they do that with a plant without a constitutional amendment in the same way? Because they basically used an administrative rule to make cannabis prohibited, completely prohibited, by making it a Schedule 1. And so to me, that seems like an end run that was created probably back during the Nixon era, you know, with the creation of the DEA for the, you know, quote-unquote war on drugs. The basic premise is that, you know, even if we, this is a 10th Amendment issue, and does the Congress, and ergo then agencies under the Congress, which would be, you know, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is, you know, well, the DEA falls under Justice Department, but it's through the FDA that we got here. You know, do they have the right to regulate this? And under the 10th Amendment, we'd have to say no. You know, who does have the right to regulate this? Every single state legislature. And we see a push for this right now in Washington, and we're very grateful. I'm very happy they're doing this. We've got two things coming through, one in the Farm Bill, the 2018 Farm Bill, that is Mr. McConnell is trying to completely deregulate hemp so each state may regulate it as they see fit. That is the proper way of doing it, and they need to do the same thing with cannabis. I know that the Democrat side of the Senate is Schumer is proposed a bill for the very same thing, and it's proper and right to do so. And it should take bipartisan support because it's a 10th Amendment issue. They need to return it to the states.
Doesn't that put you in the same position that you're in now, though, that you live in a state where that even if they did have the right to sort of oversee that, they probably wouldn't?
It does. And so that's a little bit self-sacrificing on my part rather than self-serving. But you must do what's right first. And that's where it's right first. If we start returning the power back to the states, I think we're also going to see a change in our state legislatures. We're going to see a change in the people who are running because all of a sudden when you start to realize that you do have a voice in your state legislature, you're not just waiting for the feds to make the change. As I was continually told, well, we can't do anything, George, until the feds do something. That's under the 10th Amendment. That's, you know, not necessarily true. And so it wasn't true for, you know, 46 other states. And so I think we'll see a change in that. And I think we already are seeing a change in that. There's the field this year for state legislative bodies and people that are running. There's a handful of very liberty-minded people running that are, you know, exceedingly conservative. And so they fit that bill of personal freedoms and staunch conservatism that this state has an appetite for. They just haven't known where to look for it because they're not getting it out of either of the major parties.
At the beginning of our conversation, you talked a little bit about how much your children have changed your perspective. And I'm wondering, as you run for office and jump through some of the hoops that need to be jumped through, but then also, you know, campaign and listen to constituents, how has that changed you as a parent then to sort of be part of this public process versus being a dad who is, you know, researching things for his son on his own, getting as much information as he can, you know, getting misled, getting good information, sorting bad from good. How has this process of running for office changed you as a dad?
Oh, quite significantly. And it, you know, at some point in time, you have to wonder whether if it's getting harder on your family than better, because my children are having to share me with a lot of other people that have some very serious questions, and they deserve serious answers. You know, we have a law in this state that scheduled CBD as a Schedule 4 drug, and nobody from our government is coming forward and giving a public opinion as to what the legal ramifications are of this process right now. And like I said earlier, I think there was an unintended consequence. Nobody's wanting to address it publicly. Hmm. And that's a shame. And
is that because they're waiting for DEA guidance first?
No, because they're not the same. The DEA's guidance, the DEA ruling only pertains to cannabis-produced CBD. It does not pertain to hemp-based CBD. And so there's an entire industry based on hemp-based product that are botanical oils that contain, you know, levels of CBD in them. And so those, by federal standard, should be consumable as a food product, except not in our state, because we've taken that portion away. If it has CBD, it becomes something you have to have a prescription for, or you could go to prison for, you know, 2 years. So the tragedy is that, like I said, nobody has come forward yet. Nobody from the Attorney General's office, nobody from the Department of Health and Human Services, or, you know, I mean, so we need somebody to tell all the shop owners in this state that are selling CBD products. They need guidance. I need guidance. We we're sitting here blind, and we've asked. So, you know, it's a long time coming, and it needs to be addressed now. But DEA guidance only pertains to Schedule 1 drugs. And so, if they're confused about the difference between hemp and marijuana, they probably need to resolve that first, because they're not the same. And I think that's part of the error, is that they believe hemp is marijuana, just with less THC. And, you know, the Farm Act is clear on the difference. It's 0.3% of THC. It comes from a certified grow. It has all the certification paperwork with it. I mean, it's all you have to do is a little bit of education, and you'll see that there's a clear path here. But now we have to make that path. I mean, now we need legislation that differentiates between FDA-approved cannabinoidal medicine and cannabis products made from hemp. That's a big issue, because, you know, right now, you know, there's several brands of soap on the grocery stores at Hy-Vee that, you know, contain both THC in them and CBD, because they're a whole plant product. Under the current law, that's technically a felony controlled substance sitting there on the shelves, and because there's no guidance, there's no differentiation in our statute, making the difference between the two. And so we need that. We need somebody to move on that, and somebody to come out publicly and say they will.
Right. So several issues that we're talking about here today. Do you think, we talked earlier about some of the things you heard in the State House, of people saying, you know, maybe you should consider moving to a different state. What are some of the things you're hearing from your supporters and from the people who want you to carry the flag of these issues forward to Washington?
Well, on the medicinal cannabis and medicinal hemp use, you know, what we hear the most really has been, how can they get away with this? I mean, how can they do this? And the truth is, like I said, I believe it was probably an unintended consequence that we're in this position that we're in now. I think everybody really thought they were going to do something good. I was the only one raising a red flag the whole time, because to me it really sounded just like it is. Everybody recognizes that this needs to be done. I mean, that this is not just something that is reduced to just a handful of people. I mean, there's a large percentage of the state of South Dakota that is in full support of using a medical cannabis in a regulated format. Okay, so that's, you know, this isn't something that's going to create a situation where, you know, every teenage kid is in their parents' basement smoking out of a bong. That's not what's going to happen here. That's not how medical cannabis works. And so, I mean, it really takes an instant to look at it. You know, we hear, well, we don't want South Dakota to turn into another Colorado. Well, our legislature controls the curve there. And so Colorado looks like it does because of its retail program. Now, you can decide whether you like how it looks or you don't like how it looks, depending on your point of view. But if you want to see an island or an oasis inside of Colorado that does not have a retail program, go to Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs only has a medical program done by their local city ordinance. So there's no recreational operations within the city limits. So only allowed there is medicinal. So take a short trip, have a look around. See if you walk downtown and everything smells like marijuana. Chances are it does not. And so so there's an example in there of the opposite of just what a straight up medical program looks like. And so it's a very low risk, you know, deal. We've got two great native organizations in the state that are very vocal about wanting to lead in this area and have shown great responsibility and ability to be able to help implement a program in this state. And I think we should let them. And there's probably more than just the two. It's just the two I've talked to. So, right. We're at a position where we could do it without, you know, threat of, you know, losing anything.
Yeah. So one of the top challenges here is in education, because as we talk about this, often we're using the same words to define two different things, and people are confused about what means what and what legislation. And that, to carry that through to the State House, to carry that through to Congress, so people understand and are all on the same page. And then, and as you mentioned Colorado, and I'm thinking about, you know, money, because this, when we talk about retail, when we talk about the price of the medication, part of what we're grappling with is, who's going to capitalize on this enormous industry potential. What are your thoughts on South Dakota sort of positioning itself to make the best use of that marketplace?
So I was reading an article put out by one of the heads of GW when it got its class.
GW is the pharmaceutical company that has the new drug approved. Okay,
you bet.
And, British company.
You know, they were guesstimating that they would have a profit potential of somewhere within $1 billion a year. I've seen estimates a lot higher than that. I think the whole cannabis industry itself is about a $20 billion a year industry as it sits right now. The difference is, and like you said, we don't know what the price of Epidiolex is, but every other one-off drug that has ever been produced has been exceedingly expensive. And we have heard it could be as much as $5,000 a month for the medicine. Now, of course, that's going to depend on dosage and amount of dosage and all that kind of thing. But, you know, a couple of years ago, you could buy a bottle of CBD oil in Colorado that comes from an extremely reputable source, that comes from a great laboratory in its production, that is processed the proper way, and a whole plant product that would have, for somebody like my son, who a couple of years ago would have been about 40 pounds, and, you know, it for $160 or $130, I think it was, that would be a 3-month supply of medicine that was administered at the amount of about 2 drops a day, versus $5,000 a month, which is not going to be covered by your insurance right now. So, you know, there's got to be some things done there too with insurance companies. So there's a large problem there, is that most of the people that rely on this, you know, a lot of times are people that don't have the wherewithal to, you know, go that extra mile.
Right. George Hendrickson is running for the U.S. House of Representatives on a Libertarian ticket. He joined us today in the studio from Sioux Falls. George, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Come back again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.